Boom. You looking for this?
Welcome back, boomers, to episode 3 of our series on Moon Knight. In episode 3, we learned a lot about Marvel's Mirror of Batman and his supporting cast. We learned that Moon Knight is only a nighttime threat, Layla might have more of a thing for Steven than Mark, and Mark can show some form of restraint by pulling a punch, then slapped an Egyptian gangster like he just made a G.I. Jane joke. But just like last episode, we'll start this episode with a question about the episode. Will the MCU timeline have any repercussions of Khonshu changing the night sky or showing the past? Cade, we'll start with you.
Overall, I think so. So, yes.
Leroy?
No, I don't think it will.
Jordan?
Boy, I hope so.
Boss. Or Michael. Excuse me.
I don't think it will on the grand scheme of things.
I am also on team no, because I'll just continue with my points since I'm the last one here. I don't think it will, because there's, like, it showed all of Egypt seeing the sky change, and then, it, like, they just went about their lives afterwards. So I don't see it changing a whole lot, other than, you know, we might get a comment here, you know, way down the line, so.
Yeah, that's I'm kind of the same opinion.
It's really weird that all of them just kind of like stared into the sky like it was not normal.
It's interesting,
but like,
though. But like people, common people in the MCU seem to just like go through this sort of thing every other week. So it's honestly the stars scrolling across the sky or the sun getting blotted out in the middle of the day. It's probably not the strangest thing those people have seen, honestly.
Right.
It reminds me of the meme of the individual having their own personal car being used by Hulk or Superman to smash somebody.
That so it's sucks, just like,
oh, well,
it's a Tuesday.
It's nighttime when it should be daytime. Yeah, exactly. It's just Tuesday
in
the MCU.
One of my favorite memes. It's the like when you see Hulk use your car as a ball to throw at the bad guy and you're still making payments on it, and it's like a dude crying. Yeah, I feel like in the MCU, once you've had half of your population literally poof into dust, the sky getting a little funky is going to be the least of the things that they'll probably address as a whole. Like,
can you imagine? You're just like, here we go again. How long is this poof going to be?
There might be a mention of it.
Meme here.
Yeah.
There might be a mention of it down the road. Like, yeah, like that one time when a solar eclipse happened and it wasn't supposed to, or that the sky went crazy. But I think that would be
It does make me wonder if it's at least localized. Like, I don't see Khonshu having a lot of power outside of the Egypt region, if that makes sense. I don't have any evidence for that.
I don't think that's how stars work.
I'm with you 100%.
Khonshu can make Mark or Steven or, you know, maybe that Jake Lockley character. He can turn him into Moon Knight in New York. So,
yeah.
I mean, he still has power there.
True enough. But he needed, remember, he said it was really hard. He needed help.
Right. And you're not incorrect that it's semi-localized because it's the night sky. So the half of the world that was, you know, at noon instead of midnight would have
daytime. Daytime. You want to play nighttime?
Right. Right.
That's a really good point. And I see that Khonshu needing Mark or Moon Knight's aid in that being more so due to the fact that his power is divided among himself and his avatar, so he likely needed the combined forces of his power to do that.
He needed like a physical body to do it. Like he has like the Spectre, couldn't do it. But
not
he
to be
needed,
confused
like,
with Mark Spector.
Mark Spector, yeah, him as like the ghost or entity, whatever he is, we don't know yet.
couldn't do it by himself. He actually needed, that's why he was telling Mark at the time, or Steven, I forget who was in that scene, but to follow Steven. What I do. So
Steven with a V.
Yeah, with a V.
So he, Steven with a V. Yeah, so he needed yep. the...
So that's the... going back, that's the reason why I said yes, is because we have an all-powerful deity putting his life in the hands of a so-called parasite, thus giving like a, like this episode from the perspective of like, this is episodes about Khonshu. I loved it. Him actually responding to the analysis that Steven has about the constellation shifting and like the, how he speaks and how Steven recognizes it is, I remember that night. Like, yeah, I remember right. every night. And so, just him being able to use Steven, I think that was a point in my, in the last episode for me, is seeing how Khonshu could use these multiple personalities yeah. to his benefit. And now he's stooping low enough, and he's at the point where the other gods are just like, we don't meddle in the affairs of men. Whereas Khonshu's like, no, something has to change. And so I think that's what's going to change. I mean, I don't think we would have Moon Knight if those actions didn't have consequences, right, right. you know? If this wouldn't have happened, I mean, we probably wouldn't have a world, because Ahmet is going to come back and no one's going to stop her. And so it's, I really enjoyed this episode from the perspective of how much Khonshu's willing to give into these other personalities. Now, whoever it is, Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, we've got yet to see with the rest of these three episodes. So
I like that we got not full confirmation, but pretty much confirmation that Jake's going to be in it. There's, oh, yeah. You get the whole conversation of, Steven, what did you do after he murderizes the Egyptian gangbangers? And...
Yeah, Leroy, I loved your point last podcast about how Steven and Mark are kind of swings of like their own personality, and it's going to be really interesting to see like yeah. Jake so, is the aggressor, like absolutely. More of the aggressor
There's
than we think Mark is, and that's why Mark's like, it's not me, just understand, like just there's we a, don't know the whole picture
there's
yet.
A theory,
and so this is slowly showing us yeah that I
there's
like
a theory
that theory
that who we've been seeing is actually Jake Lockley just taking Mark's name, and Mark is the billionaire, playboy, whatever. Like, they're just going to switch a bunch of personalities, because if you listen to him speak, so Jake Lockley is a New York cab driver in the comics. If you listen
Forget
to him
about
speak,
it.
Yeah, there's moments that when you like listen to, like, it's a full on New York accent. Like when he's talking to Layla, when they're in the huge market, he's like, what are you doing here? Like, he straight up says it. Like, it's
interesting.
If you rewatch it, like, listen, he says, like, sarcophagus. Like, it's perfect. And I don't know if it's a coincidence, but, like, I thought
it's gonna
it,
be
and,
one of those I've been here the whole time kind of things.
Right. Yeah. I saw it on Reddit. I like had the thought, I was just like, wow, he said that kind of weird. Like, and so, we know with accents, they mean a lot in this show, because it shows the difference between yeah. Steve and Mark and now hopefully Jake. But
yeah,
I want to go.
Oh, go ahead.
That would,
you finish that thought. I'm getting on a different subject.
Okay. Mine is tied to that, but a little bit separate. And it just has to do later in the episode. We see Harrow talking to Khonshu and kind of reminiscing over the time when he was Khonshu's avatar, and he specifically says that there, he'll be honest, there was a part of him that enjoyed the violence and looked forward to it. And I've just more and more, the more that we see about Mark and Steven and now potentially Jake, the more clearly I see that, like I said, I think back in episode one, I think that Harrow is a result of one of those personalities of his kind of taking over or domineering the others that were split when he was Khonshu's avatar. So I think that Harrow had this another sort of alter ego that enjoyed the violence and liked that. And like he said to Khonshu, left him shattered. But when he got separated from Khonshu, it left him with only one of himself or one consciousness. And that's why he says he's the result of Khonshu's influence and shattering of his mind. I think that's quite interesting because he seems to know so much about Mark, and he's referred to the voices in his head even more so than just Khonshu's, referred to him plurally. And I think I'm very intrigued to see if we get some more insight on Harrow being a further down the line Mark character, and maybe one of those less than ideal personalities is the one that won out in the end.
Right. I actually had a point on that exact sentence that you brought up when he said, I actually kind of enjoyed, like, when I was your avatar, I actually kind of enjoyed the violence. And this is at the very end of the episode. He's talking to Khonshu and the statue. I think he is going to be a longtime baddie, and I think he's going to be Shadow Knight, who is a baddie for Moon Knight, obviously, and like he's
now we're talking about Shadow Knight and not Midnight Man. That's not the same thing, right?
Correct. Midnight Man was technically in the episode.
Right. Okay. Mm. That's what I thought. Yep. I was just making sure.
Yep. No, Shadow Knight is totally different. He has like the same fighting style, some of the same powers, like he's, which would fit perfect for Harrow, because if he was in fact the old Moon Knight, then he already knows everything about it.
Yeah.
Michael, to your point, with how Harrow is explaining how he used to enjoy that pain that he would cause, that's really interesting, circling back to the very first opening scene where maybe Harrow is kind of giving into the temptation of wanting to feel that pain again, of wanting to walk on that glass, to have that little pain or that little kick of what he used to be able to do.
I dig it.
Yeah, I see Harrow very much so being the result of a who knows how long exposure to Khonshu and his wiles, and perhaps Khonshu has wisened up to the fact, but we can still see already that he isn't the most desirable entity as far as being in your head, and it's having an effect to the point where even Mark, not Steven, even Mark, when he was before all the other Egyptian deities, admitted that he had problems and needed help. And I thought that was interesting because it showed that the guy that seemed to have everything figured out and be totally cool with everything that was going on, when push came to shove, admitted that things were not all right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
For sure.
There was a couple of things I wanted to bring up, and I won't fire off on them all in a row just because I want your guys' input on them. But I guess going in order, we got to spend a lot of time with Layla in this episode, specifically in the beginning, where it is not lost on me that she is forging a false identity. I think following very closely in the footsteps of her husband. And obviously there's something attractive to that, about that, to Khonshu. I know in some aspects, in some of the comic series, depending on how many storylines there are, I know Khonshu sought out Mark because he already had that DID condition, that being multiple people. And I think they're probably hitting it at that angle in this show. And I think Layla's right behind him and could develop into that kind of a broken character pretty quickly. And I think Mark sees that. And I think Steven is not far behind.
I have a personal theory I've been working on for an episode and a half now, and this is just kind of a nice transition into it. I was going to save it for the end because it's, you know, tinfoil hat territory. But
that's what the people like.
So, right, Khonshu is threatening Mark, essentially, that he wants Layla to be the next avatar. But I think I genuinely think Khonshu wants Layla, but I think Khonshu wants Layla because Layla's a perfect fit for an Ahmet avatar. So he wants to take it away from Ahmet. And there's some actual facts behind it, thanks to this episode. Her dad calls her Little Scarab, and the scarab in the show points to Ahmet. Right. And then her middle name on her passport, and we have to take it with a grain of salt, is Abdallah, which means servant or flower of the god. And I don't know. I've just been thinking of, because they're trying to twist Khonshu to be this, which, and he very well might be, like, kind of an anti-hero. Like, he has good intentions. He doesn't want everybody to die before they have a chance to live. But also, like, he still wants some people to die. So right. I just want them to, like, totally twist it on its head to where he's totally a good guy and he's not even threatening Mark for a bad reason. He's threatening to take Layla away so that way Ahmet can't have Layla.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. But.
So that's really interesting because rewatching the episode, when I first watched the very beginning, I was like, I don't know what that really had to do with anything. And then I rewatched it tonight and I was like, oh man, her father is not an architect.
That word.
Thank you. Same thing. I've heard it both ways. Archaeologist.
Buildings are.
And, yeah. And somehow, we get into the story that Mark Spector was around when a bunch of archaeologists had died. And so my thought is Khonshu wants Layla because she's nothing but vengeance. All she wants is to seek out the person who killed her father and those who would do harm to others. And so for me, I would say that Khonshu, that's one reason why Khonshu wants Layla. I also like your idea, Tice, of Khonshu might be trying to grab her before.
I'm glad you brought up Layla's father. Can we talk a bit about that as well? Because
that rabbit hole goes a little deeper.
It does. The beginning. If we want to pull from source material, I can go for a little bit on it. But
right. At the beginning, to me, it seemed like after I finished the episode, it seemed like it was kind of a window into Layla's life and a window into like the kind of person that her father was to try to build up our understanding of him. And then later on, I can't remember the exchange exactly, but was it Harrow that said specifically to Layla that Mark knew more about her father than he originally told her? And so is that, I took that to imply that Mark was either directly responsible for her father's death or knows very, very specifically what happened.
Here's how I took that. So I felt in the show they were telegraphing that so blatantly that we're obviously supposed to assume just flat out Mark killed Layla's dad.
Right.
But mulling it over in my head a little bit, I wonder if there's just one more piece to that puzzle. And where Mark was absolutely involved and he was there and he was supposed to, but something went wrong. He had a change of heart. He tried to do the right thing and he died because of it. That's where I think we land.
Okay. So you kind of nailed, like, okay, I'm going to go back to comic book stuff here. Layla in the comic books, her name is Marlene. Her dad, Marlene's dad, is an archaeologist, and they mainly work in Egypt. Mark Spector, at that point in his life, is a mercenary for a guy called Bushman, who ends up being his like arch nemesis as when he's Moon Knight. But he's working for, not for him, with him as a mercenary, just doing hit jobs, stuff like that, just to get a quick buck. He goes with Bushman on this to go kill a bunch of archaeologists is like, and so on and so forth. He gets hit. He's at the feet of Khonshu's thing. He turns into Moon Knight, so on and so forth. Well, they are like exactly mirroring it. Cause in the second episode we saw when he's in the SUV, Harrow's like quote unquote cops. They go and pick Steven up, have that tablet that show all of the executed victims, archaeologists, and I'm pretty sure they're going to just spin it to where Layla is just Marlene and the same thing happens to where Mark was working with Bushman or another baddie. I don't think Bushman's going to get introduced in this because he's like the Moon Knight longtime baddie that is in multiple comics. So I think they're going to do it fairly similar to where, you know, Mark is with that raiding party that kills her father. And maybe Mark was directly responsible for finding them during the raiding party or something like that. And, you know, maybe Layla didn't see him during it and just found his dead body, takes him to Khonshu, and then they get married, whatever. And right. Mark just never says, hey, I was a mercenary and I was actually there to kill you.
Right. It's interesting.
Interesting. The part that also struck me with that, I was just going to say, was the fact of when Layla said that she feels like she keeps learning these things about Mark and that she doesn't really know him, and he just straight up said, you don't. I thought that was a pretty...
Dude, that like line hit menacing. Me like in the gut.
Yeah, kind of ominous and menacing, especially for someone like Layla. Like, I can't imagine hearing something like that after being married to someone and feeling like you know him. And so I don't know if that was him implying some of that guilt to her father's storyline, whatever his involvement might be, but it's fairly undoubtable that he's involved in some way. And I'm curious if Harrow is also involved or what all that entails. But I feel like you guys said, that has to do with kind of the period in time where he was first becoming Moon Knight, or right before, somewhere in that area. It feels like we're watching the current timeline to understand the past timeline kind of backwards. We're like working our way further and further back in the timeline, learning things like Hera was Khonshu's avatar. You know, Mark was involved in some way with Layla's father's death. So I feel like with how much this episode moved forward the story, the next episode is either going to feel like it really lulls off and maybe is just a whole big like action episode, or it's going to keep up the momentum. We're going to have some equally monumental story plot points dropped in the next episode.
The best part of this series, which is really weird for, not really weird for Marvel, but the series is better when Mark / Steven isn't in the suit. I felt like all of the action scenes to me, like episode 2, we get him running across buildings and he stabs a jackal. Cool. That's awesome. He's brutal. He puts him on a pillar, but like, I don't know. I've been incredibly underwhelmed.
I did enjoy the fight scene in this one, though, when he covers Layla with the cape and catches all the bullets and then like flings it back and hits them all with them. Like, come on, that's great.
So good and tasty. Yeah.
We also, we learned that this suit is a healing. It's like an armored healing suit, Khonshu said. Like, put on the suit. Or like, how do you think you'll last?
Exactly.
How long do you think you'll last without the healing armor
suit? We're
going
to circle back.
The part I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Yep. The part I really enjoyed during the fight scene is like when he's running straight through the wood timbers that guard the horse corral. Oh, yeah. I was like, good he's lord, moving. He's a truck.
And when he's so fast.
And so, too, Tice. Like... Yeah. The whole, like, bouncing back and forth, I think, is really neat. Because a part of me was like, Moon Knight gets really brutal. Like, he's, like, breaking bones. Like, he's, like, taking, like, single-handedly, like, breaking guys' arms. Like, he's kicking legs. We don't see it, like, very much, but it's just so brief. I'm just like, that's so brutal.
Like, that's what he's supposed to be. And he's going back to time. Like, he doesn't ever pull punches.
Right, but who is...
Steven does.
Right. But like Mark pulled a punch on top of the roof. He was supposed to smack that kid.
He opened
and now
slaps him just
it's like
Will Smith.
I want to know if that's really Mark. I don't know if that's Mark or if that's like, again, is it Khonshu and Mark or is it like
we definitely got that window into a third, I believe a third personality right there, because we have Steven who doesn't really, he doesn't want to kill anybody, but he's ready to punch some stuff if he needs to. He's not very good at it, of course. And then we've got Mark who is very prepared to kill something if he needs to, but clearly showed restraint multiple times. Mm-hmm. And then we've got this third that we haven't seen fully yet that is just straight up stabbing people and doesn't care. People. Yeah.
See, unhinged.
I'm going to push back on you a little bit there. I don't think Mark necessarily is going after people just to kill him. Right, I think Jake is doing that. I think Mark just wants to survive, and he's caught up in something he really, really wishes he never got mixed up in. But he is now, and he just has to do whatever it takes.
And yeah, I think that's what Ray was saying.
I think the potential Jake personality is the murder hobo.
Yeah.
And Steven with a V is obviously the counter to
the pacifist. And and I think Mark is, I don't mean he's out for blood. He's trying to kill people. I'm saying he's more capable and prepared to, if he has to, like
he's more of like a 007 killer, to where like he's killing with a mission instead of just killing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that I really like about this too, and that they showed actually multiple times in this episode specifically, is how detrimental in the situations that whoever's in control finds themselves in, whether it's Mark or Steven, how detrimental slight falters in their actions can be. For example, Mark showed that one kid the bit of mercy, and then had he not blacked out, could have potentially lost his life. Like that little bit of mercy or hesitation caused a bunch of problems, but then obviously we have him black out and there's a bunch of people laying around him gutted basically, and both Mark and Steven are equally confused. And then a little later on you have where Steven's in control in his Mr. Knight form, hesitates for just a moment, and that whole fight then shifts from Moon Knight being completely in control to him having a bunch of spears.
Take control.
I love that
part.
Take control.
It's okay. I'm going to make old nice and happy. And then, never mind.
It makes me so happy.
A little bit worked up right now.
He pulled a full-on Star-Lord to where he's like, all right, everybody chill the F out.
Yeah.
In freaking, I don't remember which, I think it's Infinity War, where he has Spidey with the freaking gun, and Star-Lord's like, hey, everybody, just chill the F out. And it was just so similar, and I freaking loved it.
But yeah, and so in that situation, Steven's slight hesitation, even though he then gave the body back over, that got Moon Knight in a position where he was pinned down, and it was actually fairly close to Layla being killed for it. And so there's just so much happens so quickly in the situations that Moon Knight finds himself in, that these splits are showing to be more and more detrimental to what's going on. And I'm also curious in that same vein, because we kind of talked about some of his capabilities, I'm just still trying to figure out and place the capabilities of his suit and his physical capabilities, because he seems very fast and very strong, but he's also being pierced through with just regular wood and metal spears, but then he's also blocking bullets with his cape, and so it's very interesting. And so even though he was being stabbed through, it also didn't seem to really slow him down, in the sense of he didn't seem to recoil in pain so much as he was just, he has a spear through his chest now.
Sort of restrained,
they were more so restraining him. And so I'm interested to see, because is it armor or more so just super healing to the point that it doesn't even matter, almost like Deadpool would be, or, you know,
and
there's...
Before we get too far away from the difference in... Imagine what a Jake Lockley in the suit is going to be. Like, if Steven is Moon Knight tight and freaking
Spawn.
Mark is the Punisher, BA Moon Knight that we know now. imagine what Jake Lockley is going to be when he puts the suit on and he's this freaking carnage murderer. Like,
don't get him in a prison hallway. That's all I know.
Episode six, please. Please, yeah. Show me a Jake Lockley Moon Knight.
Give it to me now.
If it's not too early here to switch gears, I want to switch to kind of the scene with the Ennead in the Great Pyramid, assuming that's where it was.
Yep.
Steven certainly thought so. there was a couple things in there mentioned that got my attention for sure. The one was how Khonshu mentions that the other gods abandoned Earth, but he was the only one who stayed to protect them. He mentions they went to a place called the Overvoid, which was news to me. But the thing that I'm trying to wrap my head around is Khonshu stayed around, what, 4,000 years ago? I don't know my Egyptian history that well. But to protect humanity, and I'm just wondering, like, what's he been doing? We've had quite a lot of stuff happen since then.
Yeah, it's a good point.
certainly a lot of stuff in the Middle East. Assuming the MCU follows the timeline as the rest of humanity up until about 2007.
Khonshu doesn't care about oil.
Yikes.
Yeah, it's just like he made this great big split from the other gods to stay behind, but like, and do what? I'm hoping we'll get the answer to that, but I'm not seeing it yet.
Yeah.
It's a very good point, and I honestly don't even have an answer for you.
Yeah, I think some of that will be revealed more once we get more answers to what the Khonshu and Arthur Harrow dynamic looked like, because that could be a much more severe, deeper situation that we haven't seen because of what Khonshu has done to prevent it or clean it up. And because he obviously had Harrow doing something or going after someone, so it could be one of those situations where you ask, like, what has Khonshu been doing, and he would say exactly, like, that he's been dealing with things and that's why no one has seen or heard about it. That could be the case, and I think that would be interesting to see, because it seems like Moon Knight tends to try to be this operative in the shadows and not make a big scene if possible. Granted, things have changed a little bit recently in the story, we're saying, where the scale is getting larger with Harrow trying to set Ahmet free, but up until this point he's obviously had a low profile, and I think that's likely by choice, also likely due to the fact that Khonshu doesn't want to draw any unwanted attention from the other deities. Otherwise, you know, they might turn him into a statue or something.
Right. That's a very real threat.
Yeah, that could happen.
I want to point out the exact quote he mentions about this Overvoid. He says, "Avatars are not enough. We need the might of the gods. Return from the opulence of the Overvoid before you lose this realm." There's a lot there. My deepest question here is, anybody can call themselves gods. We've seen, obviously, Thor and his kind refer to themselves as such. Obviously, as we get to know more, we see that is certainly not the case. It's just how they were referred to. The only thing we have to go off of is that, and then assuming these Egyptian deities are something similar at the very least, and this Overvoid is similar to Asgard potentially, or could be completely different. I have no background in the comics, so I can't answer that, but that's just what my brain goes.
I'm actually, as we speak, looking up what the Marvel Overvoid is,
or I'm doing
what
the same equivalent thing
would be. Right. So you guys talk amongst yourselves, and I might have an answer for you.
Well, I was just going to fill in that I found it interesting that Khonshu said that, you know, they, referring to the other Egyptian gods, abandon humanity, and then I believe it was Osiris's avatar, if I'm not mistaken, but stops him and corrects him and says, like, they abandon us. And I took that as referring to, like, they don't really worship the Egyptian gods, or at least not on the scale of, like, ancient Egypt anymore, and so the gods left. And I don't remember which film it was in, but I believe a similar concept was referred to with the Norse gods, where I think it was Odin talking about for a time when the Asgardians protected, like earlier would have been Viking time, like humanity, that they honored them and worshiped them, but they eventually forgot them. So then the Asgardians mostly kept to Asgard because it was kind of like they had been forgotten by humanity, so they left them to their own devices, sort of thing. And I got a very interesting parallel between the two with that.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how that develops, because it seems like we're entering sort of a new territory with gods in the MCU, mm-hmm. at least, and like what we understand about them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, it's like we're more better setting them up and defining them as though they were like an antithesis or a villain whose entire concept revolved around gods and killing them or something. Wouldn't that be interesting? Looks at the Thor Love and Thunder poster.
Now that you mentioned
the
first appearance of the Overvoid was in Thor 240 back in 1975, originally referred to as the Celestial Heliopolis.
You nailed that word.
Dang right I did.
Very interesting.
So
I drink it.
Also, a little fun tidbit of the Overvoid, not that we will ever have this in real life. At least God help me, I hope we don't have it. It's the source of DC Marvel crossovers.
It's how the
two universes collide.
Oh wow.
And
I was kind of hoping there would just be a bar where all
the just hanging out. Yeah,
Feige, I know there's never a chance in hell you're ever going to listen to my podcast, but please don't ever cross over with DC. Thank you.
Unless it's Patterson Batman, then we can maybe talk about it.
Or Chris Evans.
Or Chris Evans.
Wait.
I don't. Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds. There, Ryan Reynolds.
I don't even want Ryan Reynolds. Freaking CGI Green Lantern over here. Anyway, continue.
Anyway,
this is a Marvel podcast.
Yeah. No, I think it'd be interesting if these Egyptian gods we find out are like essentially piloting these avatars or influencing Earth from like a distant location or an outside realm, and then we find out they're actually just like celestials. That'd be just wild.
Oh right. Boy, I'm thinking they're sub-celestial. I would put them on par with the Asgardians, and maybe a little more powerful, but
right,
sub-celestial for sure.
And that's the thing, like none of this is necessarily clearly defined, and we have a limited exposure right. to celestials, and honestly we have limited exposure to someone like Odin, who was a more fully realized Asgardian quote-unquote god than Thor, who is a character very much so still being developed. But we do have, there's been confirmation over the things like that Thanos didn't start his conquest until he knew Odin was gone, because he didn't think he would be able to deal with him. So I think with characters like Odin, there was much more might and potential there than was even shown. So I don't even know realistically where this line of what's defined as an MCU quote-unquote god, where it lies or what it looks like.
They're for sure like sub-celestial, but are they sub-eternal?
Is there anything sub-eternal? I'm pretty sure there's... Oh, wait.
Eternals are just hyper-advanced robots.
Right, but also they're quote-unquote considered gods. They're part of the Marvel explanation of mythology, or at least the Greek version.
What right? if they're actually humans that have alien snakes that burrow into the back of their head and control their minds?
And with that, that's the end of the podcast. Hope you guys.
Yep.
Honestly, I have trouble keeping my Egyptian science fiction straight.
Right.
It might be the boring answer, and I do enjoy theory crafting, but I think we just don't have enough information about all of these different things to really truly.
Since when don't you put a tinfoil hat on?
the mystery.
I think we'll get some explanation in a little bit more defining of that come something like Thor, Love and Thunder, because I think that's why all this front end work is establishing some of these characters.
Agreed.
And defining that. So that's something to look forward to.
Agreed.
I have another comment on Kenshu, and that was my impression with him all the way till the very end of this episode was just a dick. Like, there wasn't anything nice about him. I was hard for me not to root for Harrow. Like, just Kenshu just doesn't seem great. But then he sacrifices everything at the end. Like, he says, this will pretty much kill me, and you got to make this right. And I'm like, well, shoot. Maybe he's not so bad after all.
We haven't acknowledged it yet, but Mark is now Kenshu-less.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
right.
So is Steven. So yes. We're... Yeah. Oof. It's super interesting. Continually, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, I was just going to say, over this episode, I felt the same way. He definitely grew on me. Like, at the beginning, he just slowly grew into, like, he's kind of entertaining, he's kind of funny, and then, like, you started to sympathize with him being banished, being kind of talked down to by the other gods, and then by the end, he's literally sacrificing himself to save millions of people. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm down with this. I'm cool with this guy.
Yeah. The thing that really made that more impactful for me were two things. It was one, when they were saying like that they would have to have that exact sky from thousands of years ago, and Kenshu says that he remembers that sky and that he remembers every night.
Remembers
and anyone
every
that,
night, yeah.
He got yeah, worked anyone, up. He got any, real yeah, worked up.
Anyone that is paying attention
yeah.
could very clearly and instantly tell that he's already making peace with the fact that he's going to sacrifice himself right when he says those words. Because just prior, you had the other Egyptian deities say, like, if you do another solar eclipse just to get our attention, we're going to straight up turn you into stone, my guy. And then he's there referring to changing the entire night sky. And so you as the viewer know, and you can hear it in his voice, and that was one of the things. And the other thing for me was the fact that he made that decision and that sacrifice fully knowing that it was Steven in the driver's seat. He didn't ask for Mark to like give it to Mark or anything like that. Like, to me, that showed that he finally believes in Steven, and that him and Mark and whoever else may be in there have the capability to see this through to the end, even without his power. Like, he obviously believes in them.
I adore how absolutely useless Steven was at the beginning of this, and how absolutely critical to the success of the mission he has become in such a short time.
Love that.
While we're talking about the chamber scene, Yetzel is full of crap. I don't trust her for a freaking second. I'm pretty sure she...
Hathor's avatar, is that correct?
Right. And she makes the comment saying, not too long ago, Kenshu used to enjoy music, and then Mark says, I'm pretty sure the only thing he likes to listen to is, I don't know, make some joke about death and pain and beating people's faces in. But
she pointed them in the right direction, didn't she?
I don't trust her. I'm pretty sure she's working with Harrow, but I can't tell. But my point with her is there's obviously more history between Yetzel and Kenshu, because she makes the comment like, hey, Kenshu used to like to listen to my melodies, which implies that there was a love interest potentially between them. I don't know if they're I don't know if there could be one, but it implies it, which means that she is the goddess of the sky, which would imply that's why Khonshu remembers every single sky. Because he's remembering past loves, and
that's romantic.
Sure.
Right. And new rock stars pointed that out, and I was just like, you know what? I'm going to steal that point, because that's a really good point. It has nothing to do with the episode, but it's really fun. Like, it's nice history building.
Yeah.
Quick question. Does avatar status extend the life of an individual?
Yeesh.
That was going to be my question,
we know from the show that would point one way or another. I just didn't know there was any context outside.
I don't know. Kate actually set me down a spiral on Tuesday because he asked me. He goes, hey, question. I'm like, sure, what's up? And he goes, can Moon Knight summon his suit like in the day? And I was like, no. I think it's a no. I'm pretty sure it's a no. But
seeing him do it, no.
He's Dayman.
There's no confirmation or denial in anything that I could find that he can or can't. But I took it as a confirmation in this episode when he was chasing the thugs through the streets. I mean, Mark could just as easily summon there and just be done with them. Absolutely. And he doesn't. He does it as Mark. So I took that as confirmation that he's only a threat at night. Mm.
That, to rebuttal, just though, like that Batman. Could also be him trying to keep a low profile to protect not only himself but also Layla, who already seems to be in some hot water there. So moon knighting up in broad daylight with hundreds of people around wouldn't be a great
idea. But he also allows Steven to do it like in front of London. So
true.
I don't know. I don't know. I took it as that he couldn't.
Right.
And it would make sense that he couldn't, because he gets all of his powers from the moon. And I know I mentioned it last episode, but we still haven't seen him on a full moon with the suit.
Yeah.
I noticed the moon was half full tonight.
Yeah, I've noticed that bigger. Too, yeah. It's getting there.
We're getting there.
He's getting a little bigger.
To somewhat keep up the question momentum going, I had one that I wanted to toss out to all of you guys and see what you thought about this, because so we've clearly seen that Harrow's dedication to Khonshu when he was his avatar, he talks about having enjoyed it and stuff, but now seems to be very much so glad he's away from it and seems to resent Khonshu for the time that they had together. So why is he immediately on a path of servitude toward Amit and seems to want to go right back to the position that he found himself in if he really has that disdain for it? Why is he doing that?
Maybe Khonshu saw too much in him, and where he was like, where Harrow's like, I want to pull the trigger like too early, and Khonshu's like, whoa, 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 hold up. So maybe he had too much vengeance and maybe kicked him out. I thought about that earlier.
Also,
I know that probably
what you just said, he might want to pull the trigger too early. It lines up with what Amit wants to do. Sees
pull the trigger
judges
too early.
Someone. Right. Like, judges someone before anything bad happens. And
maybe it wasn't so much that Khonshu was going too far, but maybe that he wasn't going far enough for Harrow's tastes.
My theory, and it kind of, it's the answer I have swirling around in my head from the question I asked earlier about what has Khonshu been doing all this time to quote unquote protect humanity. I think his whole deal has been keeping the secrets of ancient Egypt locked away from anybody who would get their hands on it, in this case Amit. And I think Harrow, as his avatar, got too close to Amit and learned too much about what she was about and got sucked in, and that's where we're at.
Yeah. That goes a little bit with my theory of the fact, what if it was a version of Harrow when he was Khonshu's avatar that got a hold of that, like one of his more, say, vengeful personalities, if he was split in the way that we see Mark and Steven being split, and then that one was so driven in pursuit of that that it's the only one that persists, with him now being split from Khonshu. That's kind of an interesting thought. Like, I love this vengeance that I'm dishing out on Khonshu's behalf, but here's something that would allow me to do that even more so. So I'm going to go for that. Yeah.
Right.
More proactively. Yeah.
Interesting.
So am I understanding this correct, that Khonshu knows both past nights and future nights? Because would it make sense that maybe, I really like that, your idea, Jordan, of him being the protector of Egypt's ancient knowledge, that if it were to fall into the wrong hands, it would lead the doom of this plane of existence. But if he does know, or if he does remember every single night and knows, like, he's just been waiting for this night specifically to give himself up. Like, that could be, he's been waiting for the right time to do that.
Yeah, potentially. I don't know if he can see into the future.
Yeah, as attractive as the idea sounds, or as interesting, I guess I see no evidence for it necessarily.
Yeah, I don't know either. I just thought it sounded like we had said that he can see into the future, but maybe not. I'm just assuming.
Well,
we all know.
No, I think you could be right to an extent, and I think the main thing that he was waiting for is till he felt that Mark and Steven, as a complete yet separate individual, and whoever else may be in there, were capable of carrying it out without him. I think that's the thing that he was waiting for. And now that he finally saw, like Jordan had said, the fact that Steven has become a crucial player in what's unfolding before them, he knew that it was kind of a now or never sort of situation.
And to your credit, the night sky has played a major role in all of the past of human history in predicting the future, and obviously Khonshu is connected to that, so it's certainly not an impossibility.
And it is interesting the way he said it. He said, "I remember that night. I remember every night." Like, I mean, it's definitely possible. Maybe he does know every night. Yeah, that's interesting.
Here's something to melt your brain a little bit. Just looking at it from a kind of a semi-scientific standpoint, or just a logical standpoint, what the heck does him being a god and the moon, Earth, the moon, the rock floating around the Earth, have anything to do with how he derives his power? Like, how is that connected?
He's just the god of the moon. I don't think the moon gives him powers. I just think he's the god of the moon.
But how is he connected to the moon? How did it get that way?
It's all the Transformers on the moon. That's what it is.
Is it the secret Nazi base on the dark side of the moon?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure it's like the Egyptians just said, like, hey, the god of the moon is Khonshu. And then Marvel's just like, oh, shit, we're going to take that. That's perfect.
I'm just thinking about it from a Marvel's perspective, right? Because Thor's the god of thunder, and he thought forever that his power was derived from the hammer, and then he learned
you're the god of hammers.
Comes from
god of thunder. Yeah,
right. He learned it's not, and it comes from within him. So, what the heck is this half undead, semi-interdimensional bird man?
It's that we don't really know what these Egyptian deities have to do with the Earth. Like, clearly they have something to do with early, early history of Earth. And that's probably, like, Egyptian myth led into that, like, oh, this god, this Khonshu, is the god of the moon for whatever reason. I think it really comes down to stuff that we just don't know. We don't know yet.
Right.
Just looking up something briefly for, like, the moon in ancient Egypt, a source saying in for funerals and for funeral beliefs, the lunar cycle was an image of a cycle of renewal. And so Maybe it could be that this is a chance for whoever dons Moon Knight, their chance at maybe, I don't know, giving themselves new life or like giving themselves a second chance, or in case of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John's perspective, 3 to 4 chances of like a way to like this is like the second or third chance. Like this could be, also, Moon Knight had other association in ancient Egypt, with important animals such as the bull. Hence lunar gods are frequently described with sharp horns, specifically the waning moon. And then it goes on that bulls in ancient Egypt were often a symbol of fertility, which I don't think has anything to do with what we're talking about. So yeah, it looks like there's a lot of context. It'd be really interesting to put that out there for other people to research too, and maybe get back to us about.
Fun
if we have
fun fact I've just come to realize here as we're winding down. Kate keeps making the Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John reference. It is interesting, and honestly, I haven't seen it. Maybe I'm not looking close enough, but the creators have come out and said that Stephen and Mark and whoever is Jewish in this show. And again, I don't see the references, but great, more power to him. But all of his names are Jewish. Mark, Stephen, and Jacob. All are found in the Bible, so that's interesting.
Interesting. Very interesting.
So I have two more points here before we hop out. We officially met Midnight Man, Anton Mozart. Jordan, say your line about obscure people that we have to explain.
No. Oh, yeah. I will come right out and say I don't know who Midnight Man is, but for the audience, I don't.
So Midnight Man, he's a
yikes.
He's just a costume criminal who steals art, treasures, valuables, and he doesn't steal them. Yeah, I mean, he's seriously the mustache twisting type of enemy. He just steals them for fun. He doesn't actually do it for profit. He just takes them.
So and that's who the reason, dude in the red robe was. The yes. That's, okay.
And the reason he's called Midnight Man is because, like a fantastic baddie, he always strikes at midnight. It's
amazing.
It's so such cheesy. A 60s villain. It's fantastic. I love
it. Hey, but how about that Madripoor drop?
Yeah.
In that conversation?
That was point number two. You literally beat me by a second.
All right. Yeah. All right.
Okay. So Layla steals ancient relics. Just think of her as Robin Hood. She doesn't take them because she wants them. She takes them back to where they belong, quote unquote, museum. And that means that she has multiple ties with bad people who sell ancient artifacts, like Mogart and the power broker who is in Madripoor. And they actually name drop it as they're walking up to the little horse arena. They're like,
after what happened in
Madripoor, like he's on high alert. I'm surprised you're even here. And blah, blah, blah.
I was on high alert after they dropped that line.
Yeah.
Like, right.
Who remembers Madripoor?
Everybody in this podcast looking at each other and then looking at Cade. No.
Right.
Yep, that's fair. Crucify me again on the Madripoor cross.
So
I just remember it because it's such a weird name.
All of the boomers, we should be looking out for Sharon Carter to pop up. We just might get possibly, a nice little cameo. Yeah.
Oh, right. Or Elaine from Seinfeld.
Right.
Because that's who she is. There's no one else.
I actually stood up. Like, holy freaking crap. they're
What did he say? He broke up.
He said, "Or Elaine from Seinfeld."
The gal working on her behalf for the.
I assume because Dark Avengers. He also said something along the lines
whoever plays
that
Elaine
she
from
always
Seinfeld
is going to be, which means it has to be Elaine from Seinfeld.
All these episodes now.
Right.
With purple hair.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure the power broker is going to show up because it makes perfect sense that, or Layla at least is in her world because she takes
for sure.
takes from the bad and gives back to where it's supposed to be. So
Layla, who is stabbing people with crescent moon jewelry.
Right.
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 Why not lead with that?
It's only a backup. Yes. It makes it more
we
dramatic.
We need the dramatic reveal.
We really do.
But yeah, like oh, Tice was kind of saying too, to just pay respects to our Anton actor. I would probably butcher his name.
I'm going to try
French,
it. It's Gaspard Ulliel.
There you go.
If it's wrong, I'm sorry.
But yeah, for anyone that doesn't know, he passed away in January of this year at the age of 37. So quite young still. So yeah,
according to IMDb,
little,
we have him for a couple more episodes.
There you go.
Well, IMDb just lists, and I've learned this after my foot in mouth in the first episode, they just list everybody in the episode as they're going to be in as many episodes are remaining in the show, like the Sophia Nanu gal who plays Amit. Like, she'll be in 5 episodes. No, 4. Right. No, 3.
I think they do that so that people like you look silly on a podcast. I think that's
specifically
why
they win.
Actual success.
Yep.
There you go.
Okay. Any closing thoughts, gents?
Really good episode. Enjoyed it.
Yep, enjoyed it. Looking forward to more for sure. Huh.
The more we talked about it, the more I see myself enjoying it. My main takeaway is, from the perspective of seeing this as like a Khonshu development episode, well, it's a development episode for the entire series, but my first initial thought was I really enjoyed development of Khonshu.
Yeah, agreed.
Khonshu and Steven doing the moon star swooshy swoosh things was the most D&D warlock thing I could possibly think of. Like,
it looked
I'm
so
your patron,
cool.
Very cool.
And absolutely. I'm going to take back some of your juice to make this happen because we need to do it together. And I was like, oh,
very
cool.
Very beautiful. Loved the way they handled that.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody. We appreciate it and made it to the end. Another letter to the old boomer badge for this season. And once again, we just all really appreciate you listening.
Absolutely.
It helps us keep going. And yeah, just thank
living.
You. Thank you. Thank you. Have a good one. See you in the next one.
Light as gators.
Light as gators.
Light as gators.